Welcome back to another episode of Feel Better Friday with Dr. Kathy Hindman. How are you doing, Kathy?
I'm doing very well today. Thank you so much, Izzy.
The topic for this week is winter skincare. What would you like to start us off with? There's a lot of things to consider, from frostbite to dry skin. So go ahead and get us started.
Well, I'd like to start with skin itself. You may not know this, but the skin is the largest organ in the body. The average adult has 8 pounds of skin, or about 22 square feet of skin. It's really important because, I mean, in the most simple ways, it keeps our insides in. It keeps us from oozing or leaking fluid. And it is the major barrier to infections. And it also provides some insulation. Skin is made up of 3 layers. The first layer is called the epidermis, which is the part that you can actually see. That's the part that flakes off continually. It takes about 5 weeks for skin cells to start at the bottom of the epidermis and to migrate up to the top of the epidermis. So that's why if you've got a little cut on your skin and you can see the two edges of the cut, as it heals down on the bottom, it might take several weeks before the skin appears healed on the top and returns to the usual smooth surface. You might even have peeling of the cut edges of the skin, even though it's healed underneath. The next layer of the skin is the dermis, and that's where the blood vessels and the nerves and the collagen that sort of holds your skin together all live. And underneath the dermis is the subcutis, which is sort of the fatty layer. It cushions against bumps. As I mentioned, why does it matter? Well, it keeps fluid in. If we didn't have skin, or if you've ever scraped your knee, you know how you have that kind of ooziness till it crusts over in scabs. But if you pick that scab off, you ooze again, and it protects against infection. Now, itching skin is probably one of the most common things that people complain about, and there's lots of reasons why it might itch. Well, what is itch? Itch is actually a low-level pain sensation, so that means the nerves that are running right underneath the surface of the skin are a little bit irritated. People will sometimes notice itching after they've had a cut and the cut is healing. And I usually think that's a good sign because it suggests that the cut is, in fact, healing. But there are other causes of itching. Dry skin is probably one of the most common. Certain skin diseases like eczema or atopic dermatitis can cause itching. Sometimes there's a kind of itching that comes in pregnancy. And that one is important for pregnant mothers to let their doctors know. Sometimes the itching in pregnancy is nothing to worry about, but there is a condition that we test for called intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy, which is a big long term that means for some reason your liver just doesn't put the bile acids out into the body the way it ought to, and they come out on the skin and cause a lot of itching. This is annoying but not dangerous for the mother, but it can be very dangerous for the baby and can be associated with late pregnancy loss. So, pregnant moms, if your skin is itching, tell your doctor about it at your next appointment because they will need to do some tests to just make sure that you don't have this particular condition.
Wow, I've never heard of that condition before, but that's really interesting to hear about and a good thing for people who are pregnant to know about.
We had not even been looking for this condition when I first started working at BBHC in 2000, but in the last 10 years or so, it has come much more into our awareness. And because of this condition, many mothers who might otherwise be able to deliver locally have been sent to Anchorage because it is so important to take care of the baby in that condition. And that might mean inducing labor, depending on the level of the bile acids.
I'd like to ask about frostbite and some of the things people can do to prevent frostbite and how quickly people can get frostbite, because I know it can be a very rapid process and you might not necessarily be aware of it when you're out and about, but it can also be quite dangerous.
Frostbite can happen pretty quickly, and the speed at which it happens depends on the temperature at which you are exposed. According to at least one source that I read, if the temperature is around 5 degrees Fahrenheit, frostbite can occur in about 30 minutes. And that's straight-up temperature. If the temperature's lower, frostbite occurs much quicker. If the temperature is low and you're whipping around on a snow machine, that lets your face freeze even more rapidly. The best thing you can do for frostbite in order to prevent it is to cover up your exposed skin. I think pretty much everybody winds up wearing mittens and a hat and gloves and whatnot. But if you're snow machining, wearing that helmet with a full face mask will help much more. If you don't have a helmet with a full face mask, wrap your scarf up to about the level of your lower eyelids and pull your hat down to the level of your upper eyelids. And if at all possible, minimize your exposure. When you do get frostbite, one of the odd but important things to know is don't warm it up till you are sure you won't refreeze your skin. So, if you are out and your snow machine breaks down and you're out in the cold, it's way better if you've got a frostbitten spot to just let it be till you get into the warm. There's an old thought that you should rub frostbite with snow. Please do not do this. This is not helpful for frostbite. The best treatment for frostbite, of course, is to warm it up. If it is something like a little patch on your cheek and you're in the house, you can put your hand over that to just warm it up. You can put a warm washcloth on that. If it's your hand or your foot, you can submerge that in warm water. It's kind of important to make sure the water's not too warm. Number one, it'll hurt like the dickens. Number two, you may not have adequate feeling in your hand to feel that the water is in fact burning you. So it would be important that if you have somebody around you that can test that water first to make sure that it's not too hot. You just need it just over body temperature, 101, 102, 103 degrees, something like that, and just warm your skin up. Frostbite may wind up causing you to have sort of a patch that almost looks like a burn. It may blister, once again, kind of like a burn. You may have blood blisters. If you have a small patch of frostbite, let's say a quarter or smaller, you're probably going to heal up from that just fine. But if you have frostbite on the palm of your hand, on the sole of your feet, over a big chunk of your feet, and particularly over joints, it would be important to get that evaluated at the hospital just to make sure that there's nothing more that needs to be done. And the body is amazing. It can heal up really severe frostbite, but you have to be patient and you have to not re-injure that.
I remember riding on the back of a snowgo at the beginning of this winter, and my knee was not adequately covered. And when I got back home, it had kind of swollen a bit, and the swelling went down, but it definitely looked a little purple. What happened there? Is it just the response to extreme cold temperature?
I think so. I had a similar case of inadvertent frostbite. I was wearing my snow pants, and I had to jump on the back of a snow machine as it was moving. And as a result, my snow pants scooched up, and I had about an inch and a half wide separation between the bottom of my snow pants and the top of my boots. And that little strip got frozen. It hurt. I mean, we couldn't stop. We were sinking in the snow. So we just kept on going until we were on solid ground. And then I could sort of pull my pant leg down. But by that time, it was already too late. I had this little stripe of frozen skin.
Yeah. So definitely, you know, I think it's something that you can kind of forget about, or it seems trivial to think about, you know, covering up little pieces of skin around your face or your body when you are, you know, when you're going somewhere and you don't feel that cold or whatever the case may be. But I think it is important for people to remember that this exposure can happen and that it's not really pleasant and could be dangerous.
And another important thing to remember is that if that body part is wet, the ability of the cold to get in there and freeze it harder is much higher. So if you are out walking on the tundra, you ought to be wearing good boots and dry socks. And if you get wet socks because the snow falls down your boot, if you can, get in and get dry socks on, or carry a pair of dry socks with you so you can change them out.
My skin gets really dry in the winter. How can I prevent that? Is it just moisturizer and drinking more water, or is there anything else I can do?
There are a couple of things. Drinking plenty of water is, in fact, very important. We exhale a whole bunch of water through our lungs, and when the humidity is low, as it is in the winter, you need to drink even more water. You know you're drinking enough water if when you pee, you can't really tell that you peed in the pot because your pee's that clear. It may take 3 or 4 quarts of water in order to get your pee clear. Watch your bathing. Hot showers feel great in the winter, but super hot showers scorch your skin. And soap should only be used in the stinky spots, armpits and privates, unless you have visible dirt someplace else. Because the use of soap on your legs, for instance, just peels the moisture out of them. A good time to moisturize is right after bath, or shower, or steam. And I don't really care what moisturizer you use, although there are a couple that seem to work really well. CeraVe is one name brand that has ceramides in it, which is sort of a greasiness that is normally in the skin. I often use plain old coconut oil on my own skin. Eucerin cream works, but basically any cream or lotion that you have that you like the feel of and that doesn't irritate your skin can be used. Mm-hmm. For that matter, straight up Crisco is a great moisturizing agent.
I've never heard that before, although my own mom is a huge proponent of coconut oil, but I haven't heard the Crisco one yet.
Yeah, if you have the chance to take an oil bath, it's pretty nice. Oh, this is probably not great for somebody who's going to wash their hair in the bathtub, but if you're fairly clean, you can just pour a quarter cup of some kind of vegetable oil. That's the important thing. So you need olive oil or Crisco oil, canola oil, but a vegetable oil in the water. And then as you bathe, that oil gets on your skin and the moisture's already there because your skin's been soaking in the water. And that will help trap the moisture in. Now, two caveats. Number one, that makes your tub slick as can be, so be very careful getting in and out of your tub. And number two, it can kind of gum up your towels a little bit, so maybe use a towel that you don't necessarily care about so much.
You mentioned another thing that obviously is very integral to life in Bristol Bay, which is steaming. What effect does steaming have on the skin?
I think that's a great question about which I was not able to find a whole heck of a lot of literature, because I'm not sure people are steaming the way folks in Bristol Bay steam. I mean, my goodness, I've steamed with some ladies that the temperature is the temperature I often cook roasts at. But I think generally speaking, the important things with steaming is drink plenty of water before and during your steam, because you're supposed to sweat in a steam. And number two, you will often find that your skin gets sort of mottled in color. There's a fancy term. It's called erythema ab igni, which means redness from fire. And if you are sitting close to the stove, you'll get that on whatever part of you is closer to the stove. In some of the folks that steam regularly, their skin takes on that kind of, it almost looks like a net under their skin, and that's from their bodies just being exposed to heat. Now, according to some of the stuff, I mean, I just said don't take a super hot shower, so how can I talk about steaming? Somehow I think that sweating that you do in the steam is just good for you. But once you get out of the steam, it's important once again to moisturize. And people use those scrubbies in the steam, and I know that feels amazing to get all that old dead skin off. But if your skin's already irritated, you might want to back off of your scrubber. And you might want to kind of cut back once again on the amount of soap that you're using in the steam. I would like to mention a couple of things that we often see in children. There's often a rash that occurs right around the wrists and right around the mouth. And that rash is often a combination of a little bit of moisture and exposure to cold right around the wrists because the mittens separate from the coat sleeves. And right around the mouth because they're licking their lips. And also sometimes in kids who wear their coats right up nicely tied around their faces, but then there's that edge of the coat hood right there at the mouth and they're chewing on that edge and getting it all wet. Those would be things to try to avoid. And those are places to really concentrate on using good moisturizers to combat the effect of that coldness and wetness. Also, with kids and adults, the whole issue of what's in your boots, because people will come in from the cold with sopping wet cotton socks. Number one, please don't wear cotton in the winter. Please wear wool. At least your feet don't marinate quite so much in the wool. And dry out your boots, too. I mean, once you're in for the night, stick your boots over a heat vent or something in order to get the inside of the boots dry.
Yeah, no one likes a damp boot.
And it's not safe for your feet. You can get essentially trench foot, which got its name in World War I, by the men tromping around in the trenches, which were full of water. And their feet were just always, always wet. We kind of see that in the summertime here in Bristol Bay with the people wearing their rubber boots while fishing.
Those are all the questions that I had for this session. Do you have any other things that you want to say, Kathy?
I'd invite people to send questions to doc@kdlg. I didn't get any this week, and I would look forward to some suggestions for other things to talk about. Or if you want to just message me and let me know concerns that you specifically have, I'll be happy to answer them on the air, of course, never mentioning your name.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Heinemann. We all really appreciate you taking some time out of your week to talk to us about different topics in health and wellness.
It is my pleasure. I will talk with you next week.
Talk to you then.
Bye-bye.